After last week's focus on knowledge, or the last episode, I don't know if you watch them every week. Anyway, after that episode, I realized that we need to also talk about perspectives, because that connects to knowledge. Perspective you have on knowledge or anything really is going to affect the whole thing of what you're going to focus your attention on, or how things are going to be experienced, how your life is unfolding, I guess. That's been my experience, at least. So perspective is very central to any kind of a discussion about life or learning or trying to look deeper at life. And I have written my notes as usual, long elaborate notes, because I'm so anxious to spontaneous, scared about expressing myself poorly, so I write those notes. And this week I can't look at the notes. I don't have the energy to do it in that way. I don't have the energy to be maybe focused and clear in that way, because my own perspective is colored by grief this week, and then there's the side of me that's like, okay, then don't record the episode now, don't stick to your schedule, just be. And it's not a good time to try to express, because I can't be the presentable, at least that type of a presentable character. And then another side of me is like, well, yeah, maybe then that's exactly the time to express, because that's an example. That's a very concrete and real example of how our perception is affected by whatever state we're in, what happens to be going on in life. And a way for me to actually go through these kinds of states is usually that I drown myself into work or distract until I really can't anymore, and then I have to just feel it and be in it, and it turns into this kind of dance between detaching, trying to escape, and then engaging with it and having to just feel whatever feelings I'm feeling. So, yeah, let's see. Let's see what I will remember of those notes, and in what other ways this theme will be expressed when I don't have them. It's an interesting experiment for me, this whole process and this project of sitting and talking and trying to share these learnings. And perspective is another of those very huge subjects that can be said so much about, and it's hard to hold because it can be so many things. It's hard for my mind to imagine how many perspectives exist, all of the perspectives of every single human being, and not only humans either, but that's what we usually connect with perspectives. The human lenses or filters that go about. And one subject that is very focused on perspectives, I suppose, is philosophy. That's very focused on the way that we're understanding the world, or the way that different thinkers have been thinking about the world and our role in it, and what it means to be human, or what it means to be alive, or any kind of questions and existential questions. And since I'm a person who's so curious and interested in learning different ways to think, you would think that I was always very into philosophy. But when I was a teenager, when I was 17, I think, I had my first course in philosophy. And I really disliked it. I was so annoyed, because all we did was talk about just the thoughts that some other, mostly Greek guys, had been thinking. And we had to learn their thoughts. And I disliked this, or I was angry about this. Like, I thought I would get a chance to experiment and learn to think or notice my own ways of thinking. And instead it felt like I had to take on these ways of thinking that had been decided for me by old dead guys. And I was very stubborn, and I was this kind of teenager who is kind of raging all the time and doesn't want anyone to tell them what to do or what to think. So you can imagine the clash. And I remember even in the end test, in the exam of that course, I had read the literature, but I totally refused to connect my arguments to anyone else's thoughts. And instead I speculated about what different animals would think, like how would the experience of an elephant be in this case, and these kinds of things. And of course I got a very low grade. And I didn't attend any more philosophy courses, because I had the possibility to choose my subjects, and then I prioritized psychology instead of philosophy. And it would take 8 years for me to look into philosophy again and realize that, yeah, actually, maybe there is some value in learning how others have been thinking. And maybe it can be much more than just these old Greek guys. But maybe they also can have some value. I had grown a bit from my more black and white and more reactive perspective in those years. And I could be more maybe taking in and contemplating different perspectives in a different way. And now when I think back on that, I pity my teacher, who, she was just doing her job of teaching the course curriculum, and I was questioning and challenging why. And maybe it would have evolved in later courses and I would have gotten the chance to learn something valuable or different ways of thinking. But at the same time, in that state, that perspective that I was coming from, it just totally clashed. And that's how it was. So I can see, now I can see that person that I was and how she was acting and her perspective. And I can see my teacher's perspective. And yeah, that's the thing with perspective. It's another of these contradictions or paradoxes where I have to, on one hand, acknowledge that I'm tied to my own perspective, my limited view of life and of the world. And I can't really escape. I am the filter through which I'm experiencing my life. But at the same time, I have this eternal striving, this wanting to go beyond and evolve and learn to see something that I can't see just in myself. Or I want to take in perspectives of others or stories. And there's a bit of a paradox or a dissonance between these, because on the one hand, it's so exciting and interesting to take in. And on the other hand, it can get really overwhelming, and it can also create the risk of losing yourself and your own perspective. And then at the same time, I know I'm a person who has to kind of occasionally lose my perspective so that I can gain others, or I have to be soft or chameleon-like, and that's how I learn. It's so very different how you function or how your energy works, and you can't escape from that, I think, completely, like how your own energy works, your perspective, what it's made up of. But so in the end, I don't know, can we truly see beyond our own perspective? Can we really learn to evolve? Maybe. Yes, I think so, to a certain point. But also maybe not. And maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should have something of our own that we can bring and share. And that's a tricky, interesting balancing act and a paradox at play. So a bit about perspectives as seen from the vantage point of what kind of tools could we use to expand if we want to get into this whole thing of broadening our view, learning different perspectives. Again, there's a lot of different pathways you could take, different approaches that depend on you as a person, what kind of a approach you have. If you're a person like me who is really enjoying reading and taking in those thoughts or writings or maybe stories, and or if you're a person who really needs to just have a social network or connect with others and talk with them directly and share in that way. And I mean, I enjoy doing that too, but maybe I have some limits placed on that when I have on the other hand, the need to then go and process the impressions. And if I read something from a book, for example, I don't have the need in the same way, because I can take my time with it, and that unfolds over time in a different way than when you have like a human interaction. It's very here and now. I think there are some frameworks that have been useful for me in trying to kind of first notice some tendencies I have for what my typical approach to my life is like, or how I tend to approach my life and the world, and then I can by noticing that, then I can test out different approaches. So in this episode, I want to share two of those frameworks or systems. I don't know what to call them exactly, but they have been very influential for me in noticing tendencies in myself and then trying to maybe challenge those tendencies. So the first of these frameworks is the Four Functions by Jung, in Jungian psychology. And I'm very inspired by Jungian psychology, I think, because it's very aligned with my own path in needing to move from more the outer realm or like a outward-facing approach to the world to then shift into an inward-facing where I'm trying to look inside and be more introspective. And in the time when Jung was working on his theories, there was more of a focus on, I guess, with Freud and this psychoanalysis at the time, that everything was kind of connected to how the external world interacted with you, or how you, what approach you had to the external world and the stimulus you got from that. And then it was very, very different to work on an approach that instead focused on looking inwards, that maybe we have something going on inside that is also affecting us, or maybe there's knowledge we can gain from there. And it has helped me a lot on my own particular journey of trying to look inwards, to also learn a bit about these Jungian concepts. And that's why I want to bring up this, because for me personally, it has been helpful. So with the Four Functions, it's like a way of viewing or trying to notice like one dominant way you have of approaching the world and your life overall. And then by noticing that dominant function, you can also notice what is the function that you don't use, and how can you start to try to balance it out or experiment with different approaches. And that's connected to this Jungian concept of individuation, where a person is trying to become the, yeah, how to describe that? I'm not a Jungian psychologist, but become a whole being or their fullest expression of their own individual person. I guess that's an attempt describing that. And that's something that I've been fascinated by and wanting to do, to work with that process, maybe because I have this whole background of feeling like I was a chameleon, or I had no boundaries and I didn't know who I was. So for me personally, it was very important to take part in that kind of process, or it still is important for me to contemplate around these ideas, like who am I and how can I express myself in the way that's most authentic and true to me, like on a soul level, to my soul. And in Jungian psychology, there is space for the soul. And that's also was very valuable, to have something that was like a bridge from this more materialistic or scientific views of the world into making space for the soul. Yeah, let's see if I can explain these functions. Maybe it could be useful for someone else to kind of connect to or compare to, and maybe notice, like, when I describe them, What's your own dominant function? And would it be interesting to experiment with different approaches on top of that? So the functions in the Jungian psychology, or is it psychotopology? There's some word that I don't remember right now. Well, you can look it up, I'm sure. So there, Jung has divided the approaches or functions into four different approaches, let's say. And they are connected to the four directions and the four elements from alchemy, because Jung was very inspired by alchemy and the alchemical processes as metaphors for the psyche, the changes, transformations taking place. And the first function, which was, I think, the dominant function for me that I have used in my life, is the thinking function, which also corresponds to the element of air. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, to the east direction. And then we have the feeling function, which corresponds to water and to the west. And then we have the sensing function, which corresponds to earth and to the north. And then we have the intuition, the intuitive function, which corresponds to fire and the south. So if my main function, my dominant function, has been that I'm thinking, my approach to the world is that I'm trying to analyze and process through my mind, through my thoughts, rationally. This means that my least dominant function is the opposite of that, which is then emotion, the watery depths, and if I look back on my life, I don't feel that it has always been so straightforward. I feel like it has been kind of going between those, because I had some times in my life where I was very much just trying to lose myself in the emotions and follow that as some kind of a guideline. That didn't work out much better for me either. But I know that I had a need to get from the thinking to the overemphasis of the rational or intellectual thought, or just processing with my thinking mind. I had a need to go to the opposite side. And when you do that kind of a shift, it can disrupt a lot. Suddenly you're trying a new approach, that's important to be aware of, that it can have chaotic results, and particularly when you're not used to maybe using that type of a function. Or as me, maybe I wasn't used to letting myself feel things, and then the results can be chaotic, and there can come a lot of, if you have suppressed your emotions for years, then can't really be surprised how much dark emotions also come up, like what we see as dark, like anger and a deep grief. And that process needs its own time. And I think that's something I went through thanks to having a few years where I was taking time for myself, and I had the space to go through this process. And I also did it intentionally, because I had been reading about these Jungian concepts. And one advice that is given is that when you're trying to balance out your dominant function with the minor function, you can kind of use the in-between functions as a help. So you use it like a bridge to go to the opposite side. And for me, what I intuitively did, I realized that the sensing function, like physical touch or being more attuned to the physical realm, that had really almost no space in my life. I didn't connect to that at all. So I intentionally tried to give much more attention to my touch, to what fabric I was like, how did it feel? Or when I was on a walk, I would stroke the trees or just feel how the ground felt under my feet or touch cliffs when I was by the ocean, taking my walks and sitting down on a cliff and just feeling it with my hands, like the rough stone and anything really, in any situation I was. And this was very comforting and soothing. And it opened up my world to a completely different approach than just everything is here, I'm just thinking, I'm just churning away, processing. Instead, just like no thoughts are needed or no emotions are needed to drown in. You can just like feel with your touch or your senses. So for me, that as a stepping stone, or just to complement with the thinking, that helped me. And then over time, I feel like it's gotten more into a balance where I notice these tendencies that have been maybe programmed into me for the most of my life, that you have to think and be rational. And then I notice other times when these emotions come, like now in this process that I'm with grief, that maybe at least a little bit progress has been made, that I can notice the wave coming on, a wave of grief or this blanket, and I go and I just lay down and cry. I didn't always afford myself to do that. So that's, for me, that's helpful to be able to do that. So now we discussed these three functions. Then we have the fourth function, intuition. And I realized that was also totally unknown to me, because I had lived in this very mind-focused world where we were supposed to process information through thinking or analyzing. And if you look into any kind of esoteric works or witchy kind of books, then there's going to be a lot of talk about intuition usually as a very important function or skill to develop. And that's something that I then also did, kind of connected to the process of developing my sense of touch. And there's a lot to be said about intuition beyond only this framework. But the way I understood it is, with intuition, it is like that kind of unknown type of knowing, that you don't know how you know something, you just do very deeply, and it comes from somewhere deeper or beyond, and it's not like connected to this physical realm, or it can be, I don't know, it's very hard to describe for me. But I think when it's connected to, in Jung's, in this framework, it's connected to fire, it is something that just kind of flares up, and it's a bit magical, even though it's also, when you connect to it, if you start developing that sense, it can become more and more ordinary, or you get more used to it. But because it was so far away from what I had known was possible, it was very strange for me in the beginning to get some intuitive sense about something. And it's very hard to trust that if you haven't even known something like that exists. So yeah, those are the four functions: intuition, sensation, feeling or emotion and thinking. So it might be interesting to contemplate what is your own dominant function that you tend to use. And you want to develop or experiment with other approaches and how to do that, but gently, carefully. Then I wanted to also talk about another similar framework, but also a very different framework. Because I read a book called Seven Arrows. And that was a book with stories and descriptions about this medicine wheel and the Native American knowledge or mythology. And I was really fascinated by that. And how I found it interesting how the whole idea with the four directions, that concept, was echoed between both this Jungian framework of the four functions and then in this book or in this Native American knowledge. And it was interesting because it was like, it has similarities but also differences, and I think it's a framework that has more of a larger role describing the life cycle of a human being, in addition to only maybe this kind of introspective process. So in the four directions of that system, there is the East again, which is called illumination, and it's symbolized by the golden or the yellow eagle. And then in the west is the black bear, and that is then introspection. And then in the south we have the green mouse, or innocence, trust and innocence. And then in the north, there is wisdom, symbolized by the white buffalo. And this system, or framework, or what you want to call it, was very fascinating to encounter because of how I feel in my own culture or my own history is not really connected to America in a direct sense or those continents, but I have my own history of knowing and feeling somewhere deep in my bones that there is something very animistic or very connected to nature that comes from the Finnish heritage, but that has been overwritten when the Christians kind of took over, and that's a more complex thing I won't go deeper into, but I notice a tendency for me and my perspective that I really am curious and want to have some kind of a need to look into more of these types of knowledge or writers who come from that kind of a background where maybe they have still got some connection to that root, even if their root has been severed by others or harmed. But it's still there. And for me, I feel like my own connection to that root has been so overwritten with the culture I grew up in, that I'm now looking for other pathways in or ways to build it up again by taking part of learning different perspectives from, it can be around the world or it can be in my Finnish context or Nordic context. But I notice that my own perspective is drawn to taking those perspectives as well. So this system is a bit more complex in that it can be described in different ways through different stories and have different roles. And I would encourage anyone to read this book or similar books. I don't know if it has been written about in other works. This was just a book I happened to find in my my parents' bookshelf. And then in this system, one interesting thing that I found was that it doesn't really divide these faculties or these functions in the same way as maybe the Jungian system does. It's more like an overarching approach to life that then it's kind of reflected back at you, because if you have more of this trusting or innocent approach, maybe it's a more of a nearsighted approach that's focused on your close circle, like the green mouse in the south, then maybe your focus is different. It's gonna be in that close circle, or you're not gonna maybe contemplate on the whole collective of the whole world in the same way, or I don't know. And in that system, they are not so much described as separate in that this is the thinking or this is the emotion, but maybe they color the way that you would think, or they color the way that you would emote. Like if you have the introspective, the black bear, if you have that tendency, then maybe you would have a tendency to filter it through your own experience in a different way than, say, someone who has the white buffalo or the wisdom, the approach of maybe more like, maybe that's more to connected to thinking. And as I approach this system, I notice how my own perspective of having read about the four functions of Jungian psychology, that is coloring how I approach and view this system. I have a hard time separating them because they both have these four directions and try to describe four approaches. So because the first system that I encountered was the Jungian one, I'm trying to make it fit. I'm trying to make this other system fit, even though it existed long before. And it's a very different type of a system than that one. But because in my mind, I have that perspective as the foundational or the first one, then I'm placing that other one on top, even though then I realized, like, no, they're different, let them be different, they don't have to fit, they can play different roles. So yeah, that's interesting to observe. I can't help myself from doing that and wanting to compare them and make them fit. That's what the mind does, that's where my mind approach, thinking approach activates again. Well, if I try to consider these four directions on their own terms, I feel like they're much harder to divide in that way, and they are more kind of melting together, or there's a different type of relationality in it. And in that system, I would almost think that I almost feel like my own approach is most connected to the introspective one, because I have the tendency that I understand life, I understand the world a lot through my own experiences. That's how I function typically. And that colors my perspective. I have to connect things back to myself. And maybe someone else would be more inclined to have a different type of overview or gather data, and that's not my typical approach. In this system of these four directions, they also describe how these different, on one hand, these different areas of this wheel can describe different stages of a person's life. where the eagle would be in the east, where the sun rises, that's the very beginning of your life. And then in the south is the growth. The summer and the south and the sun is like at the highest point. And then in the west, where we're going, starting to look inwards, that's the introspective. And then in the north, when you get to later stages in life, maybe you have more gathered up an overview or like a wisdom, hopefully. But then in that system, they also describe how each and every one, every human being starts with also maybe one dominant way of looking at the world. And there can be others interacting too. But you can see from a person that, you're like this black bear, or you're a bit more like the golden eagle, or these kind of approaches. So that was, I think that's very fascinating to think about how, if we can have systems or structures that have this fluidity, or they can be used in different ways, or they can be different lenses that play different roles at different times. I think that's the most interesting way to use them. And I'm drawn particularly to this system because it has such a connection to the stories in that book, Seven Arrows. It is a book of stories, and through the stories we can understand things in a deeper level and feel them. And I guess that's mostly what I wanted to express or talk about in this episode. Some things, some contemplations around perspective, to the best of my ability in this current state. And as always, it feels like I've just scratched the surface and there's so much more to say, but that's not for me to do right now. And maybe it has to be complemented with your own perspectives or whatever other perspectives you can connect to. And I'm going to leave these, some links and some books in the episode notes. If you want to look deeper into those things on your own, I think it's useful because these descriptions are just my own limited, my perspective filtered through my view or my understanding, which again can be very limited about both those areas because I haven't been a part of that culture, for example. I'm afraid that I might be distorting that knowledge, but I still chose to share it because I want to give it more space. But you can look into it more yourself and make your own connections to it. That's the best thing, I think, to do, if it sounds interesting. And then the same with the Jungian psychology. I've been reading a lot about the different concepts and find it fascinating, but I don't have the kind of long analyst training. And that's the perspective I'm coming from. I'm using it to my own means, and I think that's also fine, but just something to have in mind. And if you're curious to look more into Jungian, if you like podcasts, then there's one podcast, This Jungian Life, that I really enjoy listening to sometimes, where they discuss different concepts through the Jungian lens. So I would recommend looking into that if you're also curious listen to some interesting discussions from that type of a lens. And now I feel a bit tired. I have to go and probably rest for a while. But hope you have gotten some interesting perspectives from this. Episode, this attempt to express something, to share my perspective.